Women Worldwide with Deirdre Breckenridge introduces incredible stories shared by women across the globe who have experienced the great heights of success and, at times, the agony of defeat. With a vision to impart wisdom and advice on how to tackle barriers and soar to new heights, the show uncovers different perspectives to help you find your inner strength and to power up your own voice so you can excel in life.
Welcome to Women Worldwide. I'm your host, Deirdre Breckenridge. Have you ever felt really run down to the point where you're just not feeling like yourself? Okay, you can't see me, but I'm raising my hand because I think everybody gets to a point of being run down. But who do you turn to? Is it family, friends, or do you just try to get through the feelings all on your own? Well, my guest today can answer these questions and more. Joining us on the show is Paula Davis Lack. Paula is a former lawyer turned burnout expert. She's the founder and CEO of the Stress and Resilience Institute. Paula coaches CEOs and professionals on how to manage burnout and stress, especially in high-profile jobs. Her work is regularly featured in the Huffington Post, Forbes, Psychology Today, and Fast Company. Paula, it's great to have you on my show. Welcome.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here.
Well, we're excited that you're on the show. You have so much energy, so clearly you're not experiencing burnout, which is so good. Okay, so you were a practicing attorney for about 7 years, mm-hmm. and then you transitioned into this entrepreneurial life. So now you're considered a go-to stress and resilience expert. What happened? What's the why behind your career transformation?
Yeah, it's funny. I got some of my energy back when I left my law practice. It's funny how that happens.
Right.
I actually burned out over the course of what turned out to be about the last year or so of my law practice. And I didn't know what burnout was when I was going through it. It was just this really awful cluster of feelings and symptoms and emotions that really kept getting worse. So, I mean, being an attorney is a stressful profession, but I seemed to have been able to manage my stress for the first handful of years that I was practicing. And, you know, when I looked around and noticed all the other attorneys seemed to be able to handle their stress well, and I was wondering all of a sudden, like, what was going on and why was I feeling the way that I was feeling? Why was I thinking the way that I was thinking? And realized, I mean, I really had to do a lot of my own digging and research and looking into all of this to discover that what was actually happening to me was that I was burning out or had burned out. I didn't really put all the pieces together really until I left my law practice and thought to myself, wow, if this is happening to me, I bet it's probably happening to other people. What can I do to help busy, you know, women, professionals, high achievers really understand what this process is about? And more importantly, you know, put actual strategies in place to minimize the burnout or slow it down or to prevent it altogether.
Well, so many people need your help. Clearly, it's so hard to tell when you're, I would think, on the verge of burnout versus you are just so burnt out. So how do you know? What does real actual burnout look like or feel like? And can someone tell when they're actually headed in that direction?
Yes. So the short answer to that, of course, is yes. And really, there were three. I always talk to people about the three big warning signs that I missed along the way in my own experience with burnout. That looking back on it, you know, had I really understood and known sort of what these cluster of signs were, I would have probably been able to at least seek help or slow it down or figure out something. But the first kind of big warning sign that I missed was that I was physically and emotionally exhausted all of the time. So, I mean, we have busy days and busy weeks and we feel tired, and that's not necessarily burnout. This was more often than not chronically I was physically and emotionally exhausted. And I tell people that, you know, one of the ways that this manifested itself that was kind of odd to me is that I was walking my golden retriever at the time, and she, you know, pulled over to sniff, and, you know, I'm hanging onto her leash, and it's this nice sunny day outside, and I'm standing, you know, right at the edge of the curb. And I just closed my eyes and felt the sensation like I was about ready to fall asleep. Standing in the middle of the road, hanging onto my dog's leash. So that was very weird, something that I don't experience. And so that was like just kind of something that made me go, this, what's going on here? The second big warning sign that I missed was that I was becoming a lot more cynical. Cynicism isn't a general cluster of emotions in my personality. And basically what it was is that I would show up to work and like everybody and everything was really starting to rub me the wrong way. Even clients who I absolutely adored. So, you know, I would get calls from them and questions from clients and, you know, asking me about legal matters and whatnot. And, you know, outwardly, of course, I was very professional and handled all of those questions and concerns just fine. But inside, I was kind of going, ugh, like the internal eye roll. Like, really? Do you actually need my help with this? And that is not a good way to think when your job is to help people solve really complex problems on a daily basis.
Exactly.
So it's a lot of lost enthusiasm. And then the last big warning sign is that I felt like I was losing some confidence, and not confidence in my ability to be a good lawyer, but confidence in my ability to really see big picture. How did I fit within the legal profession? So I had worked in a big law firm, and I, you know, at the time was practicing in a big company, and thought, gosh, if this just isn't working for me, like, what's the next step? Because I've sort of tried, you know, what lawyers typically want to do, and where do I go from here, essentially? So it's that kind of that combination of exhaustion, cynicism, and what the research calls inefficacy or ineffectiveness that really are what I now know are the three big dimensions of burnout. So that's really kind of the starting point for people, is to look for yourself and see, you know, what's going on in those areas. And really, burnout and those three dimensions can be measured very, very easily.
Thank goodness you explained that, because I think it's really important for people to know what the signs are and to be able to catch them, not just in yourself, but in the people around you too. So that is truly important. What do you think, and you've been through it, so how difficult, or I'm not going to say easy, but how difficult is it for someone to bounce back from real burnout?
That's a great question. And I think the answer depends on where you are on the burnout spectrum. So I always tell people that there's a wide variety of places you can be on the burnout spectrum. So I always show this lovely little graph when I present my workshops and my trainings, and I show people like this big, huge area, which I call your stress sweet spot. So I would never advocate that we live without stress. We should have some stress in our lives, both at work and at home. The trick is, are we managing it well? Do you feel like, you know, you've got it, you've got a lot on your plate, but you're managing, you feel healthy, you feel happy. And when do you start moving out of that kind of that big zone? And when you start to notice, you know, you're tired more often than not, you're starting to feel emotionally and physically exhausted more often than not, that's one end of the spectrum, all the way through to feeling like, you know, you're burned out to the point where you're starting to get sick or feel ill. Worst case scenario is that you feel like you're about ready to have that breakdown. And I was actually at the illness point of the spectrum when I finally called a really, really big time out and said, wait a second, I'm willing to give a lot to my career, but I'm not willing to sacrifice my health. So I was actually in the emergency room a couple of times for really bad stomach aches because of the stress. And again, I didn't know that the two were connected, and it took me a while to figure that out. But I always tell people, it depends on how far along the path you are. Because once you get to that illness or breakdown point, even before then, you might need to marshal some resources like professional help. You might need to talk to a therapist. You might need to talk to your healthcare provider. Doing some of the strategies that I advocate might not make sense at that point. You might need to have a more significant conversation with your boss or manager if you feel comfortable, if you're at that point. So again, it just sort of depends on where you are along the spectrum.
Yeah, and it could be a very wide spectrum. With you being at the illness point of the spectrum, with the stomach aches and the trips to the emergency room, did somebody actually tell you that, Paula, you're burned out? Or was it, Paula, we can't find anything, you're okay, they sent you home, and then you were the one who said, oh my gosh, I've just got to be burned out?
It was so frustrating. It was such a frustrating process because nobody mentioned those words to me. Nobody even asked me how are, just the literal, you know how when you're having a really bad day, and if somebody just asks you, how you doing today? You just want to spill it. Like it might cause right. you to like burst into tears or just say like, oh my God, yes. help. That never happened. And I was like, I was so at the point where I just wish somebody had just generally asked me, how are you doing? Because I would have probably just lost it and
right.
and would have helped. But no, I had to piece that together on my own. And now doing a lot of this work in healthcare, so many providers and physicians are burned out that I probably looked a lot like them and they didn't even, you know, consider it something that was worth asking. So when I talk with physicians and medical students and nurses, I always encourage them to ask your patients just simple questions like, how is work going? How are you doing? And see what kind of response that elicits.
Yeah, simple, easy questions. Now, I know we had a previous conversation and you had mentioned that you went on to do some graduate work. And I think you talked about a study that you did at the University of Pennsylvania with soldiers that was pretty interesting. Would you share that?
Oh, absolutely. So I had the privilege and honor of working with drill sergeants and soldiers, both officers and non-commissioned officers and their families for a period of about almost 4 years after I got my master's degree in applied positive psychology at the University of Pennsylvania. So once I graduated, I had the opportunity to apply for and was selected to be part of the training team teaching resilience skills to this group, this population of folks. And it was really life-changing on a lot of different levels. It's always always fun when I tell people, you know, I do a lot of teaching and I do a lot of work training, and the people who I work with always teach me, I think, much more than what I teach them. But really, it was a project between the United States Army and the University of Pennsylvania. And the Army, you know, called the world-renowned researchers, resilience researchers at the University of Pennsylvania and said, hey, you know, we'd like to create a force that's as mentally tough as it is physically tough. We've heard about this resilience work that you all are doing. Do you think it might help? And from there, we ended up training during the time that I was there, it was over 25,000 soldiers.
Oh my goodness.
Yes. In these resilience skills. So how do you grow from stress? How do you kind of build those reserves when things aren't going well? And the Army has been studying the effects of the training and other components of the program. And what they found is that the officers who had higher levels of resilience were promoted ahead of schedule. They were assigned tougher tasks. And they achieved the rank of a one-star general faster than their counterparts, which was really, you know, interesting to see. And then with the non-commissioned officers, what they noticed is those who had higher levels of resilience were better at coping emotionally with stress. They called a friend or did something that was more productive instead of going home and having a six-pack. You know, they were catastrophizing less. So that thinking style where, you know, something that could be even small happens and all of a sudden you picture yourself living in a van down by the river within 5 seconds. That thinking style is so powerful, and they noticed that they were experiencing that thinking style less frequently. And then they were also reporting higher levels of engagement. And the way that their studies defined that was by saying, if I would choose my current work again if I had the chance to do that, which I think is really important for workplaces to know, because there's so much talk about engagement and how do you get people to, you know, stay longer in the workplace. And so those were some interesting findings from that. But really, it was just probably the biggest career highlight that I could have asked for.
Well, it sounds like a fascinating experience. So you've worked with the military, mm-hmm. And it just kind of begs the question, what type of executives or industries really, really need stress and resilience training or an expert to come in and to talk about it?
That's a great question. And really, I think burnout is now just so prevalent and across so many industries that really I've chosen to focus in a couple of different areas because I see the need as being really, really great where I focus. So I focus a lot in the legal profession simply because that's my background. And I do a lot of work with attorneys and folks who work at law firms. And then the other area that I focus a lot in is healthcare. And healthcare is really starting to understand and realize that there's a burnout problem that's going on in that industry. The latest studies have pinpointed physician burnout now over 50%. So about 54% of physicians are experiencing burnout on some level. And there's a range that's actually built into that. Studies range from about upper 30% to 54%. But I mean, that's a lot. You think about that the next time you go to see your doctor. But I know in finance, they're finding that about 60 to 65% of bankers between the age of 25 to 44 are reporting some level of burnout. So, I mean, it's really hitting a lot of industries hard. And I think that's because a lot of industries are really changing rapidly. We're, you know, a global economy. Things are moving at a much more rapid pace. Industries don't look the same today as they did even 5 years ago. So there's really a lot going on across the board.
With all of the changes that you mentioned, being in a global economy, the different industries experiencing, you know, you said about the physicians and the study, is this an easy sell or is it still a tough sell? You know, how hard is it to penetrate an organization and get their leadership team to understand why you would need to come in and educate on this topic?
Yeah, it depends on the industry. So what's interesting about the legal profession and my lawyers, people always ask me, were drill sergeants the toughest audience that you taught? And I said, no, it's very easily lawyers by far.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah.
And part of that is because lawyers have they're outliers in certain personality traits compared to the general public. So lawyers are very, very skeptical and they're very, very urgent. So that's a very powerful combination. So sometimes it can be really tough to break into the legal profession in a way that gets them to understand that this is such a pressing need because they're very skeptical right off the bat and you have about 3 seconds to tell them why it's important and then they're moving on to something else.
Well, you know, I'm thinking of the lawyers I know, and, you know, I didn't think about this before, but skeptical and urgent just about sums it up. So I'll remember that.
Yeah.
So now starting your own business is completely different than being a lawyer and working at a law firm. So, you know, how did that go for you? Did you see success immediately? Were there some challenges when you were launching your business?
Yes, there were definitely some challenges. It's funny because I have this picture on my bulletin board, and it's on one side, it's a graphic of what people think success looks like, and it's just this straight arrow going up. And then on the right side, it's what success really looks like, and it's this big jumbled mess of like interconnected like wiggles and. That's probably more like what I've experienced. And when people ask me, you know, about starting a business, I tend to think of my own business in phases. So when I stopped practicing law, my intention was really to start more of a coaching business and then go back to get my master's degree. I really underestimated how much work my master's degree was going to be. So that really took the focus for me. And I spent a lot less time working on my business. The second phase was really then, you know, that Army training program and being really, really excited and grateful to be part of that, which I did for a handful of years, while also, though, building the scaffolding for making sure I had a jumping off point when that training program ended, because we knew that it would. We knew that it wasn't going to be indefinite. We knew that we were training people to go back to their units and train. So we eventually were going to train enough people to take this back to home essentially. And we were sort of working ourselves out of a job. So that was phase two. And then by the time that ended, I had built enough of a scaffolding so that I could, you know, really step off from that and, you know, devote 100% of my time to, you know, taking this type of work to different industries and organizations.
Oh, really smart to phase it out so that you could give full attention and set yourself up for success by the time you got to phase three. Excellent. Well, Paula, I'm going to ask you just to hold your thoughts for now. We're going to take a very quick break to give some love to our sponsor. And when we return, Paula will share how she handles really tough days and the steps you can take on your tough days, too.
You have been listening to Women Worldwide with your host, Deirdre Breckenridge. Segment 2 is coming right up.
Creating brand loyalty requires a unique blend of strategic communication and innovative technology. Pure Performance Communications works with businesses to move their audiences from awareness to action and impact by offering a digital marketing roadmap. Let us help you foster deeper engagement and forge stronger relationships along the way. Visit us at pureperformancecom.com. That's pureperformancecom with two M's.com.
Now, back to Women Worldwide with your host, Deirdre Breckenridge.
I'm Deirdre Breckenridge. Welcome back to the show. Paula Davis-Lack, CEO and founder of the Stress and Resilience Institute, and I were just chatting about burnout, how to tell if you're headed for burnout, and what you need to know. So, Paula, everything that you've shared has been so interesting. And just going back to your own journey through burnout, where was your family and friends through this? How were they a support system as you were experiencing the signs?
So I love this question because the short answer is they really weren't, which sounds really awful.
But I didn't expect you to say that.
Here's why. And this is what I see from a lot of people who are experiencing burnout. They hide it. Mm-hmm. They don't want people, especially their coworkers and people at work, to know that they're suffering somehow, that maybe they're not handling things as well. You don't want to be the person at work who's sort of singled out and being looked at as the person who's the weak link. And so you do whatever you can to kind of cover it up or sort of deal with it in other ways. And I didn't know how to talk about it. Whenever I told my husband or my family that I was feeling stressed, you know, or I said that at work, the response was, oh yeah, we're stressed too. You know, join the club, you know, no big deal. And so I didn't have the word burnout, and I couldn't educate my family and my husband in the way that I needed to, I think, for them to actually understand that this was something completely different than just being a little bit stressed out. And so I think that, you know, family and friends can really do a lot to understand what the warning signs of burnout are. Again, asking your family member, how's work going? Are you doing okay? You know, especially with your spouse or significant other. I mean, they're really in it with you. And I know my husband has experienced burnout, and this is now after the fact. And so I recognize that, and he was able to have a conversation with me that was much different than I could have with him. So we had a serious conversation about, is this the right work match for you? What can I do to give you some support? Things like that. But it's really, I think, becoming better educated, A, about what burnout is, and then B, what does the person need for help?
Well, it sounds like an educational process. Is your husband, is he an attorney now, or was he an attorney? And is that why he was burned out?
Okay. No, he's not an attorney.
Because I just immediately thought if he was burned out too. Do you think that, you know, I know you mentioned that you don't want to be the weak link. Is it also a sense of pride?
I think it's a sense of pride. And one of the things that I talk about, you know, there's a very specific formula that kind of spins burnout in workplaces. But I think one of the things that factors into it a lot is what I call the sense of being addicted to busy. I think generally in our lives, we feel like we have to keep adding stuff onto our plate so that we look important and feel important, especially to the outside world. And in the workplace, I can't emphasize enough how validating it can be to be the person who's the rock star, to be the person who is, you know, burning the midnight oil and pulling all nighters, and you're financially rewarded for that. You are rewarded just by, you know, having other projects. This is certainly the legal profession, having other product or matters and projects given to you. And it's hard to detach yourself from that feeling of, I am so important because I am, you know, the rock star person, that you kind of don't know when to stop or turn it off. And I remember having conversations with a lot of my friends saying, like, you know, my salary is really nice. I would happily give some of my money back to just, let me give some of this money back and trade it in for just, you know, some peace.
Yeah. I mean, especially I would think people in hindsight, after they experienced the burnout, might also feel that way too. That, gosh, if I could go back, I would have traded this in for sense of self, peace of mind, and not running yourself into the ground. That's really interesting. What about if you were to compare life then and life now, what does that look like? So life as an attorney with the stress and life as an entrepreneur with stress.
So there's a lot of stress that goes with owning your own business. And the fact that I talk about my business as though it is a child. So I have a little human child. I have my daughter as one.
Okay.
And I tell people I have my daughter and my business. I consider my business my second child because I think it needs as much time and attention. And, you know, when you're the one who's responsible for making all of the decisions, there is no day off and there is no... there's no off button. But the thing that I have found to sort of balance that is that I have so much more autonomy now and I have so much more flexibility. So if I need to, you know, come in and work most of the day on a Saturday, I can do that, but then I can take Monday off. Or if Lucy, my daughter, is sick, normally I can, you know, just kind of drop and go and don't necessarily then have to worry about that conference. I've had to obviously reschedule calls and do some other things.
Sure.
And manage that. But it's not the same heavy weight that I think I would have and carry with me constantly had I still been practicing and having the demand be, you know, billing all of these multiple thousands of hours kind of hanging over me. So the autonomy and the flexibility is absolutely huge for me.
Absolutely. Did you have Lucy when you were an attorney, or is Lucy a part of your entrepreneurial life?
Lucy is part of my entrepreneurial life. Yeah. So she just turned one. So
Yeah.
So it's been great. I've mentioned more than once to my family what a blessing it is to have this level of flexibility with her being so young, because it's, you know, a lot of kids got, you know, really clobbered this last winter when it comes to illnesses, and she was no exception. And so to be able to take her to the doctor and other things, you know, on a moment's notice was really, really helpful.
Well, just remember, your child will experience 500 cold viruses before she even gets to kindergarten. So
I think she had half of them this winter.
Okay. So be ready. But, you know, the good news is the more they experience beforehand, the less they'll be sick when they actually go to school.
That's what I hear. And I hope that's the case.
I hope so, too. So what about your skills? I mean, skills as an attorney, some are the same when you become an entrepreneur, but what have you really learned about yourself when you were building your business that you want to share?
You know, I love that you mentioned that some of the skills are the same, because I've been surprised at how much of my attorney stuff has carried over to, you know, my work as an entrepreneur. So, you know, being able to negotiate contracts, being able to, you know, stand up for myself in a room full of people, and just general things like that have really, really, really helped me. I think it's been interesting to see some of the other skill sets of mine come out and actually go well. So, I mean, one of the things that I thought when I first started was I was going to do all of this writing, and I still do. Writing is really my passion, and I write a lot, but I was always so scared about developing sort of the speaking and training side of my business. And one of the things that I really had to develop was looking at that aspect of my business in a way that made sense for me. So if I frame myself as a teacher, so I'm going in and I'm going to teach you some information and you're going to teach me some stuff, then I'm fine. But it's sort of like when you expect me to know the answer to every single question, and then that's when it feels inauthentic to me. So being able to, even though I am the expert, cast myself as, hey, I'm just your friend coming in to teach you some stuff. Let's have some fun, has really, really helped. So kind of playing with some of those mindsets has been something that I've had to really learn.
That's awesome. Is there anything that you really, really love to do as an entrepreneur with your business? And then on the flip side, not so much. You could, you know, kind of take a pass, and if you could delegate it to somebody else, you would do it in a second.
I think some of the answer to both of those, to that question, both of those questions is probably marketing. So I, being trained in psychology, I love the psychology of marketing and trying to understand how to reach new populations of people and how do I do that. But at the same time, like trying to manage my social media feeds and trying to manage my e-newsletter and trying to get some of those aspects out have finally been something that I've unloaded to folks who I've hired to help me with that. So I think really just understanding when to call in the resources and when to have people, you know, who can help you with some of those things, has been both very much a challenge and very much something that's a very necessary component of being a successful and lasting entrepreneur.
Yes, so true. And, you know, as far as social media, do you feel that that is helping your business? Is it helping you to grow relationships in communities, or are you on any social networks like a LinkedIn where you're building relationships with other business professionals? How is social helping you or not so much?
Yeah, I mean, I think depending on what platform it is, I think they serve different purposes. So I have a very different audience on LinkedIn. That's where I usually connect with a lot of organization, you know, C-suite, CEO, professional development type folks. And I tend to write a little bit more businessy for that platform, for LinkedIn and for Forbes and such. But for Huffington Post and for even Psychology Today and some of my own writing on my own blog, I'm tending to write more for just sort of the stressed out individual who doesn't necessarily have to be in the C-suite. It could just be somebody who's, you know, having a bad month at work and just wants some tips and strategies. So it's really, for me, kind of balancing and having a clear idea in my head, who am I actually talking to when I'm writing whatever it is that I'm writing.
Well, that's really smart. Just what you said about having a different purpose for different communities, because that means that you're truly sharing valuable information and things that people would expect and want to know. And you're not wasting their time or just sharing stuff, marketing stuff that nobody cares about.
Yeah.
You know, I just have to ask this question. So you've had tough days as an attorney, and you must still have tough days today. What's the formula for smiling at the end of the day, no matter how tough it gets?
So I teach people how to become more resilient to stress. That's how do you grow your capacity for stress-related growth. And one of the things that I tell people is sometimes resilience is just muddling through. Sometimes it's just putting one foot in front of the other and just making it through the day, and that is a success. So I laughed when I saw your question, because I would never advocate for people having to sort of like be smiling at the end of the day. It's just get through the day and are you in one piece? Sometimes that is good enough. And that's really what resilience is too. So, and it's like, are you taking enough time to reflect and learn from, you know, if you've been knocked down or you've had some bad days or things maybe aren't going so well or things are tough, what are you learning from that? Because stress and meaning are very often connected. We don't usually get stressed out about things that we don't care about. So trying to make those connections has been really helpful for me as well. Like, where's the meaning? And really for me, it's been relying a lot on my strengths. That was a really eye-opening experience when I went through my master's program. It was really putting a name to what are things that sort of naturally come to me and like give me energy. And trying to tap into some of that really, really helps balance the tough days. And wine, I'm not going to lie.
Right.
A glass of wine here and there helps a lot.
I know. Well, that could make you smile at the end of the day. You know, I always kind of laugh at the question too, because, you know, sometimes, no, you're not smiling at the end of the day. I'm always smiling in the morning, and unless somebody knocks the smile off of my face. But clearly, if it's stress, now I know that Yeah, it's because I care. Yeah. Reframing and looking at that in a different way. So I thank you. I thank you for that point. How about some advice? Maybe you could just, through all of your experience and what you've put together for your business, the resilience training, what advice can you give to others who might be feeling burned out and just want to turn things around?
Yeah, one of the things that I really want to do for people is to normalize the experience of burnout. Not that it's necessarily normal to go through burnout, because aspects of it are signaling that there probably might be some things you need to change. But so many people are burning out. So just for people to know that they're not alone, first of all, because I felt very much that way. I felt I was really, you know, the only person who must be experiencing this. And there's millions and millions of people who are going through it. And you don't need to necessarily make a drastic life change, because I hear that a lot from people. It's almost like they're afraid to acknowledge that they're burning out, because for them, it might mean, you know, gosh, if I say it, then that means I need to quit my job or make this drastic change. And I tell people, I think I'm probably the exception to the rule in terms of leaving a profession and starting a brand new one. So there's lots of little simple strategies that people can put in place. One of the ones that I tell people the most is to change your passwords. Now, if you're sort of at that illness and breakdown phase of burnout, changing your password probably isn't going to reverse that for you. But if you're, you know, having a lot of stress, I always tell people, you know, what's a goal that's really important to you? What's a positive emotion you want to feel more often than not, especially if you're kind of in that cynical phase? What's something that you want to do better? I mean, what's a goal? Like, do you want a vacation in Paris next year? Whatever it is for you, limited only by your imagination, convert that into a password. Because you type in your password so many times a day, it's a way to actually prime your brain, just giving yourself a little subconscious signal that, hey, I think I want to go over in this direction. So, you know, I tell people I don't set New Year's resolutions. I kind of think of a word or two that I want to govern my year, and then I make my passwords based on whatever that word is. So that's a really simple technique. And another one that I tell people is to ask yourself, when you're feeling really stressed out, where do I have a measure of control, influence, or leverage in this situation? So it's a very simple question. Where do I have a measure of control, influence, or leverage in this situation? Because we spend so much time and energy and emotion on trying to fix or change things that aren't fixable or changeable. At least there's nothing we can bring to the table to do that. So best to kind of understand, what can I do? What can I leverage? And let me put my time and energy in that bucket. Has helped me immensely. It makes my airport experiences now semi-tolerable. So instead of like stewing for an hour about why my flight was canceled, it doesn't make me happy, but at least I can, you know, start to activate what can I do productively a lot quicker.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. I want to go back a second to the password, because I think that's really interesting. So that means literally, you know, you mentioned something about maybe you want to travel. So I keep telling my husband, I'll see a commercial, I think it was booking.com, where the woman's in the classroom, she's got all the kids who are writing on the board and screaming. And the next thing you see, she's like on the beach and she's getting a massage, and it's just so beautiful. And I keep saying, gosh, I don't know, I want to go to an island. Maybe it's Barbados, maybe it's Bermuda. So are you taking a word and are you putting it on your refrigerator? Are you creating something that, you know, so that you can see it? Or is it just something that you remember in your mind, like, oh, Barbados?
Yeah, you can do those visualization techniques work really well if you want to create like a little vision board or put posters up. I've been to Bermuda, by the way, and it is fabulous. So that would be very high on my list if you're thinking of a beachy vacation. I mean, you certainly can have those visualizations, but what I'm talking about too is, you know, when you open your computer and you're typing in your password, make it like vacation in Bermuda or go to a beach. So that can actually help on a couple of levels. First of all, I'm assuming that thinking about beaches helps you feel relaxed. It probably generates some positive emotion, and it's a goal that you have. So it's, you're sort of hitting a threefer there by typing in that password. So if you type it in 20 times a day or more, now When you're thinking about, do I buy that sweater or do I save some money because I want to go on a beachy vacation, you might be more inclined to save the money and put it toward the beachy vacation because you've sort of like burned this little pathway in your brain that you are trying to get closer to the goal of going on a beachy vacation. So, I mean, I've had people make their passwords like literally anything you can think of. One of my clients changed her password to Appreciate Kelly. And I had no idea what that meant until she explained that she was starting to understand that her perfectionistic tendencies were getting in the way of her being an effective leader on her team. And other team members were leaving, and she was attributing it back to some of her perfectionistic tendencies. So Kelly was this new person on her team, and she really liked her, didn't want her to leave. Oh. So she made her password Appreciate Kelly. So every time she typed it in, it was just kind of a way for her to kind of zap back into reality, like, whoa, okay, dial back the perfection a little bit. I really like Kelly and I want to keep her.
Oh my gosh, that is just such great advice. Change your password. You can do it in so many ways. Well, I just have one last question. It is super easy. Where can women worldwide listeners find more about you and your work?
Sure. They can go to my website, which is stressandresilience.com. And there they will find my just hot off the presses new released ebook, which is called Strong: Stress Relief Strategies When You Have 10 Minutes or Less.
Oh my goodness. Everybody has to go get that ebook. Go there now and download it.
Oh,
thank you so much for coming on the show. I personally feel so much more aware about burnout, and I hope everybody listening does too. And we also know we have a great resource in you, and you know, we admire your work and appreciate everything that you've shared about your journey. So thank you. Thank you so much.
You're so welcome. Thank you. It was really, really wonderful being here with you to talk.
Well, thank you. And thanks to everybody for tuning into Women Worldwide. Until our next episode, stay focused, energized, and feeling empowered.